You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 184.
I have a fact about the number 184.
Of course you do.
It's a math nerd fact because that's what I do.
Go on.
Did you know that 184 is the difference between 25 squared and 21 squared? If you square 25 and you square 21 and you subtract the square of 21 from the square of 25, you get 184.
All right, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat little fact. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial.
You know that feeling of wanting to finish a movie just because you paid for it? Or when you're playing a board game that's too long and you think you may as well finish, even though everybody's miserable?
We do something similar at work where we have a certain tool that we keep using because it's the tool that we picked and there's other better tools out there, but we keep using the one that we already picked.
That's called the sunk cost fallacy.
Yeah, just because you've already invested resources into something doesn't tell us if it's actually worth that next bit of resources to see it through.
If you're not enjoying book one, why keep going just because it really gets good around book five?
If you need a sounding board for your life's financial decisions, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and set up a time to talk to First Move Financial.
Thanks again to First Move Financial for sponsoring the show.
So, lately, in my life, I have been trying to be smarter about the things that I eat.
Yes.
And one of the things that comes up when you start to look at these things is calorie counting and looking at the actual contents of food. And it reminded me of these books. You know these books, these like Eat This, Not That books?
Oh, yeah. My mom loves those.
So, I don't know how I feel about those actual books, but it did make us kind of start talking about something that we thought might be an interesting thing to bring to our listeners at the Family Gamers.
Yeah, the idea of play this, not that. Now, some of this information will not be new because these are generally games we talk about a lot. However, having a handy cheat sheet or a guide to tell other parents, hey, you know that game? Let's try playing this game instead. You're going to like it so much better.
Yeah, exactly. So really what we're going to be doing, we're going to introduce it on this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast, but I think it's going to maybe become kind of a recurring segment on the show.
I think so.
So we're going to talk about certain games and what games we would recommend do the same job, but better.
Or have the same feel.
Yeah. All right. But obviously, before we get into that, which is our topic for the week, let's talk about what we've been playing.
All right. So it's been a weird week for me in that every single day this week, I have played one game. Exactly one game, no more, no less, one game a day.
I mean, it's nice and spread out in your BG stats, I guess.
It's been kind of weird. It's just been a factor of playing with one kid after school, and then the next day playing with one kid while I'm making dinner, and not really having time elsewhere in the day, but making that little bit of time, 20 minutes or so, to play one game with one kid.
Yeah, so I know one of them, and I'm going to totally ruin it. I am so envious of the time that you get to spend playing Skull Hollow. You've played with every single one of the giant creatures at this point, and I'm super jealous of you.
Yeah, you should play more of that.
I would love to. That would be great. I should play more games in general. I actually like really have an itch to learn a new game right now.
You have too many hobbies you're trying to all do at the same time.
No.
Maybe.
No.
Yes. Yes. Yes, okay. By a lot.
But anyway, so Skull Hollow.
Yeah, so Asher and I have now, between the two of us, tried every Guardian combination. I definitely have my preferences, but overall, I'm really enjoying the game. I would still say it's true that the Foxen have an edge, but if you figure out the correct strategy for a Guardian, you might pull it off.
Well, see, I almost like that metaphor, right? I know we've talked about this before, but I almost like this metaphor of like mom or dad or the older person in the play group is playing as this big bad Guardian and the scrappy little guys are working together to fight off the, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the
big bad. I like it too.
Yeah, I think it's a really neat dynamic. I love this game so much. I could watch people play this game. I'm not a big game watcher. Like, it's not really a thing for me.
Not.
I know a lot of people like to do that kind of thing, but this is a fun one. This is really, really cool. From Pencil First Games, this is Skulk Hollow. Love it. Well, you mentioned that I don't play a whole lot of games anymore because I have too many hobbies. And as much as I would love to disagree with you, I kind of can't.
Because I'm right.
Anyway. But I did host our Common Heart Game Night, and this month we're featuring detective games.
So what'd you play?
We played Detective Club from Blue Orange Games. So Detective Club is a lot like Dixit, basically. So the way this game works is somebody will choose a word. It is the keyword that everybody is needing to represent. And they'll write that word on every score pad except for one, on every little, basically, piece of paper except for one, and then shuffle those up and then pass them out. So you can think like Spyfall, where one person is the spy and everybody else knows what's going on. So that's how this works. And then what happens is the clue giver, who wrote that word down, plays a card from their hand. These are very Dixit-like pictures. If you've played Dixit, okay. You know what I mean.
Sure.
If you've played Mysterium, similar idea. They're abstract. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. So they'll play a card. Everybody looks at that card. And then everybody else plays a card of their own. Now, obviously, one person doesn't really know what the word is. So they're trying to glean information from everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Then the clue giver plays a second card. Everybody plays a second card. And then the accusations fly.
Okay.
And everybody has an opportunity to guess who they think the faker is, basically. Now, keep in mind, not even the clue giver knows who the faker is.
Sure, sure, because it's been assigned.
Yeah, so they have no idea, but they still can't vote.
Sure.
So if the faker gets 0 or 1 votes of you're the faker, then the faker gets points.
Okay.
If people guess who the faker is, then the clue giver and the people who guessed get points.
All right, sure.
Something like that. There's probably a different scoring use case in there, but you get the idea of the game. And so you play this. You can pick a point threshold or something. It doesn't really matter. You play a certain number of rounds. We played it so that everybody got a chance to give a clue. So that was Detective Club from Blue Orange Games. It's a fun little game. I don't feel like I need to have it in my collection, but it's something I'm willing to play when it comes out.
Sure. Well, you and I tried a gorgeous game from Habba called Mountains. And then the next day I turned around and played it with a couple of the kids.
Yeah, I really liked the feel of this game. The mechanics of this game were fine. Everything, you know, okay, it all made sense. I liked stamping in my little stamp book. That was nice.
Yeah, that was
but
a nice
I liked
touch.
The feeling of the game.
Yeah, I like it. Your strategy is very dependent on what you think you can cobble together. Can you get all the items? But you're incentivized to share with people and to help other people get up the mountain, which is cool.
Yeah, it is interesting that you are incentivized to share, but you're kind of not. Like, it's a weird dynamic, I guess.
Well, so you're incentivized to share. You're not allowed to not share if you have the item and you've been asked for it. Like, go fish.
Right.
But you have to come up with the right strategy for the items you have and the items that you know other people have. So if you don't know a lot, you might be best off sticking with low point value missions for a little while.
Well, so the way the game works is, if you need to borrow a piece of equipment from someone else, you give them a favor token and ask for it for each piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really so much that the other person is incentivized to share, but you don't mind sharing because you're getting something out of it.
Right,
you're getting
you
these favor tokens that you can then turn around and use again. So it's less about incentivization and more about there being value to you sharing with your opponent.
Yeah, well, I mean, it like go fish. It's just kind of what you do.
Right.
But unlike Go Fish, you're not losing that card.
Mm-hmm.
It's still yours.
Right. That's true.
It's just like the other person is borrowing it.
Yeah. I mean, this is very much a game. I don't want to call it a fragile alliance because it never really becomes something that's antagonistic. But it's very much a game where you kind of want everybody to do well. You just want to do the best.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's Mountains from Habba. And I mean, again, this is one of those games. Habba's been doing this a lot lately. We talked about this with Miyabi. It's just beautiful art. There's no yellow box. You know, if people didn't notice the red HABA in the corner, you might not think this is a Habba game.
Yeah, although I will say, once we got into playing it, the simplicity of how you play definitely felt a little bit like a Habba game. but in a good way.
Yeah, but in a good way. It just felt like something. I mean, it's really remarkable, and we're starting up our series this coming week with a look at some HABA games and how those HABA games have literally been designed to help children learn. Mm-hmm. But it's really remarkable how good of a job HABA does with refining the gameplay in their games.
Yeah, there's really nothing extraneous there.
Yeah, it's almost always super smooth. Everything that you do has a purpose. I really like that a lot. Yeah. And honestly, even though that's still true with Valley of the Vikings, there's something that feels kind of not HABA-ish about that game. I don't know what it is. I mean, I know it won Kinderspiel and all that other stuff, and it's a good game, but it doesn't feel super HABA-ish to me.
I think Valley of the Vikings suffers from a little bit of the same problem we saw with the Hermes, which is it's a really good idea, but it's almost trying to cram a little bit too much.
Yeah, there's almost too many mechanics going on. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's it.
Which,
I'm not sure.
It's still a fun game, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from it.
But it doesn't quite feel like your yellow box little kid have a game.
Well, it's just, again, it's almost like HABA is suffering from its own success in the sense that their stuff is so refined. I mean, look at a game like Dragon's Breath, which won Kinderspiel the year before. Everything is like, it's so simple and straightforward. When Tiny Towns came out, we talked about how did this not already exist?
Right.
And that feeling, whatever that is something that I feel a lot when I play a HABA game. Because they distill it down to its core mechanics so well all the time.
Yeah.
And Mountains is another example of that.
All right. Well, besides Mountains, you also played King Domino Duel.
I did. Yeah, we had a little lunch date. It was wonderful. I love taking you on lunch dates.
I like having that little break from the day to do something without our kids and without needing to do a whole lot of planning to make it happen.
That might be the best part, actually.
But we played King Domino Duel. The more I play it, the more I'm really appreciating it.
I agree with you, which maybe means that there's something janky about the rules because
there's definitely something janky about the rules.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe that's the issue because now that we're more comfortable with the rules, it's something that flows a little bit better. But boy, howdy, those first couple times I played it, I was like, this is tough.
Well, there's more to keep track of than there is in King Domino, which I think is part of it. And it's also a tighter game for two players than King Domino is.
King Domino is designed to be a game for potentially more than
two
players.
For up to four, so. I know. Well, King Domino is relatively tight at two players, but King Domino Duel is very, very tight. Mm-hmm. Every decision is important.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think the strategy that, for me at least, comes up aces is actually pretty much the same strategy between both games.
Oh, yeah, I agree. You're looking to maximize your points by making the largest area you can with the most X's in it you can.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's obvious. But what I mean by that is you really lose a lot by spreading things out and trying to get a little bit of this and a little bit of that. No. If you go all in on one or two symbols, that's how you win the game.
Sometimes,
every time I've decided to do that, I have destroyed you in this game. I would say give it a shot.
Sure.
But that is King Domino Duel from Blue Orange. It's a tiny game. It's probably 8 inches by 1 inch by 3 inches. It fits in a purse or something like
that.
The
box itself fits in my purse, although I have a big purse. But if you just wanted to grab it for a little lunch date or something, it's basically 3 sheets of paper and 4 dice.
Right.
And 2 pencils.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a lot there, and you can play it in a nice compact space.
Right.
You and I also tried Everyone Loves a Parade.
We did.
We tried it with all the kids, and then we also tried it just you and me.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about this game over the course of the week because there's a lot of opinions about this game. This is a game from Calliope Games. It came out last year from Mike Mulvihill. I really appreciate a lot of the stuff that happens in this game, but mechanically, there's so much setup in this game and moving around of stuff. It's kind of a nuisance, especially at high player counts.
Yeah, it did not go over well at 5 players. It was slow. There was a lot of stuff getting moved around. And at a high player count, there's a lot more of other people's turns that you have to try to compensate for, and you can't always. So it's more frustrating at a higher player count as well. We really need to try it at 3 and 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
So far, we've only tried it at 2 and at 5.
Right.
But you lose a little bit of the feeling of it being, you know, a parade with lots of floats at 2 players. But it does play quite nicely
right
with the back and forth.
So the way this game works is everybody drafts a card at random from the order cards
deck. Yeah.
And then you can look at this. It's private. It's secret. You go through a series of turns where you are trying to manipulate the dice that are on these crowd cards. And you're also drafting cards that go into your float. Right. And your goal is to have cards in your float that match up with the dice that are on certain crowd cards.
Right. But you're going to claim one crowd card.
In the order of those cards you drafted at the beginning.
Right. So in a two-player game, usually you can look at your order card and be pretty sure I'm going first or I'm going second. And if you're going first, you're going to want to manipulate those crowd cards to make one float very, very good for you. And if you think you're going to be going second, you want to manipulate those crowd cards to make the two floats very, very similar.
Yeah, this is the classic, you can have the first piece of cake, but your sister has to cut the pieces kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where you end up really wanting to make them as equal as possible, so you still get something that's just as good. Ultimately, my biggest issue, I think, with this game is that there is no decision-making in the order in which you draft the crowds. It's completely random. You can't do anything to affect it. And even though the later numbers, 5, 6, 7, 8, in the draft order have more powerful abilities associated with them, you can't make up for that because it changes the way everybody plays.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that is kind of a frustrating thing. But again, like you said, in a lower player count, that's a little bit mitigated because it's very clear you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you can do stuff to make it basically stink less.
Yeah, but if you're in a 5-player game and you get order number 8, which is the absolute last one.
Right.
It's got a couple of neat powers on it, but you're looking at those 5 floats and saying, well, I can try to specialize in something that nobody else wants, and that way I might get the float I want. Anything else I do, I'm going to have taken away from me.
And you're so subject to the other players, because you only have 20% of the effect on the crowd cards.
Right.
So those other players might have other things in mind, and I mean, let's be honest, hate drafting is a thing. You don't have anything hidden, really.
Except for your order.
So people are going to look at the dice, and they're going to look at your cards, and they're going to know what you want. It's not that hard to figure out. So I'm a little concerned about those kinds of things with this game. It certainly is fun to play at 2 players, and I'd love to see it at 3 and 4. But I think there's some mechanics issues when you get up at higher player counts.
Yeah, the other thing I'll mention is that the theme is cute. I like the parade theme, but it was a big miss with our kids. It's not exciting for them.
Well, in all fairness, we don't take our kids to parades.
I do take our kids to parades. I take our kids to the little rinky-dink local parades that we have.
No, but that's not parades.
Well, I get it, but they're excited even for the little rinky-dink local parades. This does not capture that feeling well.
Yeah, that's all. I don't. I just think in our family, parades are not really
not a big thing.
No, we don't get excited for them. It's just like, oh, well, there's a parade today. It's something to do. Let's go watch the parade. You know what I mean? We turn on the Thanksgiving Day. I mean, this is the biggest and most important parade in the United States every year. And they wander in and they watch some stuff and then they leave. Like when I was a kid, I was on my stomach and on my elbows for 4 hours watching this thing.
Wow, you were?
Well,
wow.
I mean, it was like, look, it was the 80s. There was nothing to do. So, but the point is, I agree with you. I think the theme was a little bit of a miss, but it's not like our kids are crazy parade people and they did a bad job.
No, I wasn't trying to say that.
Right. So it is a parade theme. It's a little bit cute, but it's more serious of a treatment of a parade. It's not like super adorable, mega, like
yeah,
the things that you put on your floats are not Barney and Snoopy. It's
flowers and flags. It makes me feel more like a local parade because what you're putting on your floats are flowers and flags and balloons, regular old helium balloons.
Yeah, and that's very much something that I think doesn't capture the imagination.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, and obviously this is an intellectual property thing and all these other, I totally get it, but I really want to play it a little bit more at 3 and 4 player counts to really see what we can get out of this game.
But so far, it's kind of a miss.
It's kind of 50-50 right now.
All right.
So, fair enough. Anyway, that's Everyone Loves a Parade from Calliope Games. The other game that we played at Common Heart Game Night was Wavelength. So we play a lot of party games because it's a big group of people.
Hey,
Wavelength is
works.
Great. It's so great.
You know what? I was skeptical, but I really enjoy Wavelength. And I do check in at least a couple of times a week to the Twitter feed, Wavelength Daily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a fun time.
Yeah, we have been joking, the Common Heart Leadership folks have been joking about putting out hypothetical wavelength gauge things to put on and get people's opinions of them. I think my favorite one from last week was Dog Name, Cat Name.
Okay, nice, nice.
Okay, and so for those of you who are playing at home, I'm going to say the hint that was given, and Anitra here is going to attempt to guess from 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock where the dial should be placed for dog name versus cat name.
Lay it on me.
The clue that was given was Rex.
That seems pretty strongly dog name. I could see naming a cat that way, though. So if we're saying dog name is at 9 o'clock and cat name is at 3,
yep,
I would probably put it at about between 10 and 11.
So it was around 11:30.
I would not have pictured that.
Yeah, it was a weird one.
I mean, I suppose that's a tough one, though, if you want to come up with one that it's almost equally dog and cat feel. That's a tough spot to be in.
It would have to be like a person's name or something like
that.
But anyway, so those were the two games that we played at Common Heart Game Night this past week. Detective Club from Blue Orange and then Wavelength from Palm Court.
I played a little bit more, as we mentioned. I played some Boom Bang Gold with Elliot in preparation for doing our Snap Review, which you'll hear later on in the show.
Yep, he's pretty funny.
He is. It's just a silly, fun game. There's not a whole lot else to be said about it. And you set our son Asher the task of learning super-powered Smash Masters. And then he taught me.
Well, I mean, this is a guy who loves to play games, and he really likes Pokemon and dueling games and this kind of thing. And I was like, you know, we've got this game. We need to take a look at it. And here you go, buddy. You figure it out and teach us.
It's a nice, simple dueling game. I definitely like the idea. There's a lot of reading, as there is in a lot of dueling games.
Of course.
But aside from the fact that there's a lot of reading, it's nice and simple, easy to get into. Basically, there's story cards that let you do special things. And then other than that, you're basically picking a character and saying, this superhero is smashing this other superhero, and I'm going to play a smash card. And then they can play a smash card to counter, and you can play another smash card to counter the counter, and on until somebody runs out of cards.
All right. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, superheroes punching each other in the face one of them lands.
There's a little bit more to it than that, but that's 90% of the game.
Well, it sounds like a CCG that is directed right at that 9-year-old age level.
It's well made for that.
So it was what? Super-powered Smash Masters?
That's right.
All right.
And I think that's it. I think that's enough games.
Okay, sure.
Why don't we take a break?
But wait!
Anitra,
I've got a fever. And the only cure is more science.
For science!
For science! We've expanded the sample size of our science this week. Some of you may be aware that Wendy's has started serving breakfast. So I have put the Family Gamers family on the line for you. And we went to Wendy's for breakfast. Let's talk about it right now.
Hey, everybody. It's the Family Gamers on location. Whereby on location, I mean at the dining room table. This is a special group edition of...
For Science!
We just got home from Wendy's to pick up the new Wendy's breakfast. I think we were planning on eating in the dining room at the Wendy's, but apparently, even though they open at 6:30 in the morning at the drive-thru, the dining room is open at 9, so we couldn't do that. So I think I'll start this whole thing with saying that their coffee is not terrible. I wasn't courageous enough to get it the way I normally get coffee, which is black with a little bit of milk in it, but it's not bad. So let's see. Asher, what'd you get?
I got a bacon, egg, and cheese on a croissant.
What do you think?
It was okay.
It was okay? You've had breakfast sandwiches at like Dunkin' Donuts and stuff like that before. How does it compare?
It's a close second.
Close second. Not bad considering they've been doing breakfast for 3 days. Elliot, what did you get?
I got a sandwich with bacon, egg, and cheese on it. And it's actually not terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Would you get it again?
Yeah. Would you compare it to something from like Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks or something? Is it better or worse?
Better,
in his opinion. Okay.
I got sausage, egg, and cheese on the biscuit. And I really like it because like the biscuit is really flaky. Mm-hmm. And it goes good with the sausage and cheese.
Sweet.
I got their chicken and biscuit sandwich.
The buttered chicken and biscuit, right?
Yeah.
Like the honey butter
chicken biscuit. I don't know. It's obviously they noticed how well the whole chicken on a biscuit thing has gone for McDonald's and are trying to do the same thing.
And Chick-fil-A and Popeyes?
Well, yeah. It's basically your standard Wendy's fried chicken, which already is
a cut above.
Yep, I agree with many that. Other some factors. People may disagree, but I agree with you.
And the biscuit, as Claire said, is delicious. So it works pretty well together. And none of that weird pickle thing that McDonald's does.
First of all, that's a Southern thing.
Yes.
Second of all, it's great.
No.
Whatever.
Disagree.
Anyway, I got the pièce de résistance. I got the breakfast baconator. It's probably more of a commentary on the quality of the bacon. So I should say it is sausage, cheese, 6 slices of bacon, a fried egg on a sandwich bun.
That's a lot of bacon.
It's going to kill you.
Yeah, probably. It's kind of too much bacon. Not that the bacon flavor is too much, but like because it's not really high quality bacon, it's a little bit too chewy. Right? Like there should just be less of it. There's just too much to kind of get your teeth through, even though the flavor is pretty excellent. And then, of course, we had a discussion in the car on the way back to Casa de Family Gamers about the potatoes and about hash browns in general. So just to lay the foundation here, I am of the opinion, Anitra, you can express your opinion in a moment, that Dunkin' Donuts hash browns are too flavored, and McDonald's hash browns, while oily, have some kind of special magical sauce that makes them absolutely delicious. So that's where we're coming from with this. What do you think, Anitra?
Well, so let's point out that the potatoes you get with Wendy's breakfast are not hash browns. These are basically very small home fries. So they're your home fry kind of dimensions.
I don't think they're very small home fries. They're very small potato wedges.
They're very small potato wedges.
Yeah, but they're...
I guess they're not small for home fries.
Medium to large home fries.
They taste like home fries.
Yeah, they're...
Well, they're supposed to.
They got a nice spice to them. They're nice and crispy. And importantly for me, they don't feel so, like, oily and greasy that I know in eating them, I am not going to regret eating them in half an hour, which is what happens every time to me with the McDonald's hash browns.
Okay.
I would definitely do Wendy's breakfast again for the home fries alone, although the biscuit and the bacon and stuff are also good.
That's it. So we have Dunkin' Donuts and McDonald's breakfast to compare it to in the Northeast. So, Asher... Better than or worse than McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts breakfast?
Worse than Dunkin' Donuts, better than McDonald's.
Okay. Elliot, better than or worse than McDonald's and Dunkin' Donuts breakfast?
Better.
Better. Claire, what do you think?
Better unless I get a donut.
Okay, that's fair. And Anitra?
The next time that I actually need to get out and grab a fast food breakfast, I would probably go for Wendy's. Like, the food is all pretty decent, and I think in eating it, I am not going to regret this in an hour.
I mostly agree with you. I think that this Baconator thing is it's pretty delicious. It's just kind of chewy. So I probably would make a different sandwich selection, probably. I will say, and I didn't ask everybody else this, so this is kind of cheating, I probably would pick Starbucks breakfast over this. But I would say it's definitely better than McDonald's, and it's probably better than Dunkin' Donuts.
I strongly agree.
And that is all of us at the Family Gamers on location doing an experiment for science.
And there you have it. That is our thoughts on Wendy's breakfast. Are you willing to get the breakfast Baconator?
No, but the rest of the breakfast is good.
It wasn't bad.
I'm not saying it was bad. I'm just not willing to get it.
All right, that's fair. Okay. By the way, for those of you who are curious, it's about 740 calories for the breakfast Baconator. So a little heavy for a breakfast food, but that shouldn't be a surprise, I guess.
Eat it on your cheat day.
That's what I did. All right, well, we are actually going to take that break. And when we come back, we're going to talk, not eat this.
Play this.
Play this.
Not bad.
Not bad. Hey, Elliot, let's go prospecting for gold.
With dynamite.
This is a snap review for Boom Bang Gold from HABA.
Woo!
Boom Bang Gold is a simple, fast-paced game from HABA. Up to 4 players will race to get as much face-up gold from the mine as quickly as they can.
So the box for Boom Bang Gold forms the mine. You put it in the center where everybody can reach it. Each player gets a shelf and a character with a special little box to hold the gold that they've collected.
Mm-hmm. They're prospectors.
Each character actually has a special protection that can come into play later.
And then, everybody takes the most important part of the game.
Dynamite!
On the count of boom, bang,
gold!
Everyone tosses their dynamite into the mine. The box actually has a false bottom in it, which makes things bounce up and around. Sometimes they bounce out of the box. But what each player is doing is looking for pieces that have flipped over, showing gold nuggets or special items. Elliot, what do you do when you see gold nuggets or special items?
You put it on yourself, and at the end of the round, you put it in your box.
Can you use both hands to grab those golden nuggets?
No, only use one.
Okay.
While you're grabbing gold, though, watch out. There are special danger tiles, like bats and snakes and rats and ghosts!
If you see the danger that your character is protected from, remember we talked about those special abilities? Shout it out! Then you can keep collecting while all other players must place both hands on their head and say,
Help!
Before continuing, danger tiles are not collected, they just stay in the mine.
Once all the face-up tiles have been collected, then any action tiles that got collected now get played. Picks let you turn over 5 more tiles to look for hidden gold, and you collect it if you find it.
Elliot, what does the dynamite do if you pick up the special dynamite tile?
You get to use 2 sticks of dynamite and throw them into the mine and collect all the stuff that's face up in the mine, unless it's like a snake or something.
A player as the Sheriff Star forces all other players to put illegal gold, which is the orange gold instead of the yellow gold, back into the box.
But the Sheriff gets to keep all their illegal gold.
They sure do.
The Revolver lets you duel another player and possibly steal up to 2 pieces of their gold. Mm-hmm.
Once all the actions have been resolved, they are returned to the mine and everyone puts the gold they obtained into their chest. Set the clock hands to a new day and play another round. The game ends after 12 rounds and the person with the most gold is the winner.
Boom Bang Gold is silly and fast-paced. It makes for a frantic, fun time. An entire 12-round game takes about half an hour, but you can easily cut that in half. Most of the time, we only play 5 or 6 rounds. The later rounds usually go quickly anyway, since a lot of the gold nuggets have already been taken, and what's left is boulders, dangers, and specials.
So this is a competitive speed game. This can get frustrating for kids who have a slower reaction time, so just be mindful of that. One thing that we've done to mitigate this is nobody can put their hands in until the youngest person has picked up their first token.
Or you can up the challenge by changing how you react to the danger tokens, each character having their own special thing they have to do when danger is called out.
There's a couple of different things that you can do to house rule this game to make it even easier for a younger child if you have a big age difference or a big skill difference. But playing the game the way it's intended, it really is best designed as a very silly filler for adults or a nice short game for younger kids of the same skill level.
Yeah, there's a reason why the box says ages 7 to 99. Younger kids certainly can play it, but they'll be more likely to get frustrated by the speed aspect.
And if they start really chucking that dynamite, those pieces can travel pretty far. So just be mindful of that. Have you ever done that, Elliot?
Yes.
So for this casual, silly, fast-paced game that really can be played at almost any age level, Elliot, what are we going to rate Boom Bang Gold from Hoppa?
3 out of 5 gold nuggets.
And that's Boom Bang Gold
in a snap.
Watch out for ghosts!
Ah! Oh, help! Help!
And we're back!
Oh, yeah!
So let's talk about Play This, Not That.
So this is, I mean, at its core, this is why we do what we do.
Yeah, pretty much exactly. Starting with the very first episode of the Family Gamers podcast, with me telling people, don't play Candyland. Candyland is awful.
Should we look back for a clip?
Sure.
Diddle-a-doo, diddle-a-doo, diddle-a-doo.
Anything is better than Candyland.
That's true. And you know what? It's funny because we're here to talk about some stuff that we like to do with our kids that is gaming related.
Yeah.
That's better than Candyland. Oh. Maybe that should be the name of the podcast. Better than Candyland.
Everything is better than Candyland. Getting stabbed in the face is better than Candyland.
Oh, I don't know about that. That's a little rough. Oh, man. All right.
Our children have asked me if I'll play Candyland with them. And I have literally answered, I will play anything else.
Anything else.
Anything.
Okay, well, guess what, guys? We're going to be giving away a copy of Candyland today. No, not really.
No,
that's not going to happen. We wouldn't do that to
that,
you.
That would be awful.
Diddle-a-doo, diddle-a-doo. Well, that was a little bit dramatic, but I guess I understand how you feel about that game.
Okay, I've tempered my opinion a little bit since then. but I still won't allow Candyland in my house.
We burned our last copy.
So it's only fitting that for our very first segment of Play This, Not That, we're going to talk about what to play instead of Candyland.
And Anitra is so passionate about this, we have two games that are potential solutions for this issue.
We do. If you're looking at Candyland as an introductory game for taking turns and matching colors.
Really young kids.
Like 3 years old, 2.5 years old. Then my recommendation is Hiss from Game Right.
Mm-hmm.
So this game is about taking turns and matching colors. Except, first of all, you can play it cooperatively if you want. And second of all, none of these little flimsy cards or giant board to try to work through. In Hiss, you use big chunky cardboard tiles, and each one has a piece of a snake on it with either one or two colors. So you're just going to match up the colors with other colors that are already out and make snakes.
Mm-hmm. So Hiss is a really nice game that does offer that opportunity for color matching, because someone will draw a tile and then look for a snake that's already out. It can be any of the snakes on the tableau that matches one or two of the colors and has an open spot with that color. And you just attach the next section
just
of the snake.
Attach it right on. Yeah. You can play it competitively in that whoever finishes off a snake gets that snake to have points at the end of the game.
Yeah, whatever. The point of the game is color matching and turn taking.
Yes.
And the key here is that, I mean, sure, there's no big board and flimsy cards, but that doesn't really matter to me. What matters here is that players are taking a card or a tile and then making a decision on what to do with it.
Yeah.
Candyland could be played with a robot. There are no decisions to be made when you play that game.
Correct.
And at its core, that's the issue. It's not about the... I mean, if you had Candyland Deluxe, it wouldn't change your opinion of Candyland.
Correct.
It's about player agency and the fact that players have the opportunity to look at their tile, think about what it says, what information it has on it, and act on that information in a way where they can make a decision.
Yeah. They can't always. There are many times that there's only one possible spot to put it, but you're still looking for that spot to find it rather than just trying to trace up the path.
Yeah, that's true. Or if there's no matches, you have to just put that piece out
and start
eventually
a new snake.
It'll, you know, become part of another snake.
Yeah.
But there's internalization of information and then action that follows that.
Yes, exactly.
So that is why we say play Hiss, not Candyland.
However, if you're more interested in Candyland simply because it's a board game, you move along the track, and again, about taking turns, about color matching.
Especially if you have a kid who's a little bit older, right? So, and when I say older, I mean up to like 6, although this is a game that I would play as an adult.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, it would be a quick filler game, but I would still play it. We highly recommend Monza from Habba.
I love this game. I couldn't believe when I looked this game up that it was 10 years old when we got it.
So Monza is a race car game. And for anybody who's seen Downforce or reviews of Downforce, the track is a little bit reminiscent of that, except much simpler, because again, this is a game for young children.
Imagine a fairly simple loop track that is made of multicolored bricks. That's the easiest way to think about it.
So in Monza, you get to roll 6 dice that all have the 6 colors on them. Then you will get to move your car up to 6 spaces if you can arrange the colors to match an available path for you, basically. So you say, okay, well, I'm going to move to this green one. Okay, that takes my green die away. And then from there, I can move to purple or I can move to yellow. Which one do I want to go with? And you do your best to use up all the dice that you have so you can get very far along the track.
So Monza allows some of those same things. You have color matching in this game. You have turn taking in this game. It is a little bit more advanced than a game like Hiss because there's some logical processing going on. You're looking at those dice and trying to resequence them in the way that most benefits you.
Yeah, so the big thing about Monza is that while starting in the same foundational spot as a Candyland, like we're working on turn-taking, we're working on color matching, it also introduces strategic thinking, looking ahead and saying, well, if I play this green now, I won't have it two or three spaces along when I need a green later. So can I play a yellow one to start and save my green for later?
The box says that it promotes learning tactics and also learning and naming colors. And that is exactly what raises this above Candyland, because Candyland is just color matching. And obviously turn taking, but pretty much every game is going to help with turn taking. So,
just about, yeah.
So Monza is really the kind of game that you want to use to elevate your kids from rote, roll and move, or flip and move into something that actually involves tactics.
Let me point out one more thing about Monza. Even if you play it with six players, because by the way, you can play it with six players, it's a short game. It is not going to take you more than 15 minutes, and most of the time it will take you less. That is not the case with Candyland.
This is true.
So, if you have a kid who has played a few board games, but still seems at about that Candyland level, we would say, play Monza. Not Candyland. Let's talk about another childhood favorite game.
Yeah. This one's a little bit different, though.
Yes.
This is a game that we actually still like.
Yes.
Right. But we have another game that we like even better.
A replacement. The classic game we're replacing is Guess Who. I really enjoyed this as a kid.
I think Guess Who is fine. I think it's a perfectly good game. It has one major limitation, though.
I think it has two major limitations.
Okay, so I'll talk about my limitation and you talk about yours.
Okay.
Major limitation number one, it is a two-player only game.
I completely agree. Major limitation number two, almost every character is male and every character is white. When you're trying to teach deduction and you've been like, oh, is your character female? All of a sudden, you're down to like two characters.
I don't remember it being quite that bad.
It's bad.
I know they're still releasing the game. I would hope that they've adjusted that by now.
The last copy I saw was still very unequal male, female, and diversity of skin color.
Well, suffice to say, our solution doesn't have that problem.
That is completely true. A game that solves both of those problems and is very fun is Dinosaur Tea Party. So in Dinosaur Tea Party, you're not asking questions like, are you male or female? Or, you know, are you a green dinosaur or an orange dinosaur?
Yeah, it's things like, do you have spikes? Are you drinking tea? Are you in a green room?
Are you wearing a hat?
Yeah, but you don't even ask questions like that, which is how you do it in Guess Who. You have to work it into conversation, we'll say. Oh, hello, my dear. I did notice that that is a lovely pair of spectacles you're sporting today.
Oh, not me. I'm not wearing my spectacles today.
Oh, I'm so terribly sorry.
I must have left them at home.
That's pretty much how it goes. You are a dinosaur in Dinoton Abbey.
Oh, I love it.
Yep. And you are trying to determine the identity of your fellow dinosaurs. Everyone that you ferret out, so to speak, awards you a sugar cube, and I believe the default in the game is the first one to three sugar cubes wins. This is great because it means you have a multiplayer game that does not have player elimination. When a player is found out, they simply draw another card and they continue with the game, and people are still able to guess that new character.
Our only caveat with this game is it's a little tough to play with older players whose eyesight is not so great. The little indicators on the cards are quite small.
I didn't really find this to be that much of an issue because I guess I'm not old enough for it to be a problem. All of the indicators are really there to make picture interpretation explicit.
Yes. If you look at the pictures themselves, you usually can figure out without the little extra.
Right. So it's not that big of a deal. But the art in this game is absolutely tremendous.
In addition to all of that, Dinosaur Tea Party also adds an additional mechanic that once you're playing with a group where everybody can read, makes for even a little bit more strategy.
There's banners that are put on certain cards that say things like, always says no, or always lies.
Or my personal favorite, switches answers, which means whichever answer you start with, say you answer the first question yes, then you must answer the next one no, and then you must answer the third one yes, and on and on.
So that definitely makes it a little bit more complicated of a game. But I think it's great. I think it's really fun. I think this is absolutely a game that is designed to be tongue-in-cheek. And it's an absolute blast.
And kids get the tongue-in-cheek nature of it, which they don't always with adult humor. So I love it for that, too, because everybody realizes it's absurd to have a bunch of dinosaurs sitting around sipping tea with their pets and their hats and their neckties.
So if you're thinking about playing Guess Who, we would say play Dinosaur Tea Party, not Guess Who.
I think that's going to be it for this week's edition of the Family Gamers Podcast.
Mm-hmm. We hope you like this segment. Please let us know if you find this informational and enjoyable. It's definitely something that we would consider bringing back every couple of weeks.
Yeah, if you have a specific game in mind, please let us know. We have a list we're going to work through over time.
We have a surprisingly long list, actually.
But we are always open to requests.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram at Family Gamers AA.
That's right. If you have a game in mind that you would use to replace Candyland or Guess Who, you can head over to the Family Gamers community. You can get there the fastest way by going to thefamilygamers.com/community and join in and post away.
That takes you to our Facebook group. If you don't like the social media, you can email us, anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and leave us a review, please. We would love it if you would leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast subscription source is. You can also find us on TuneIn or Spotify, all of the places. This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to schedule your 15-minute call to see if First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
Well, I think that's going to be it for this week.
All right. Awesome. Until next week, everybody.
Play games with your kids.